I wanted to look this morning in the just at the very beginning part of Hebrews chapter 11, which is an awesome chapter. It was written for people that were having a really, really hard time. And it was, because they had come to accept Jesus and then people really were giving them a lot of trouble because of it. And some of them wanted to quit. And so he writes, telling them, don't quit in a million different ways. And then in chapter 11, he said, here's other people that lived before you that had a hard time and they didn't quit. And look what happened to them. So just follow them. And so I thought I would love to just talk for like the next, few weeks about Hebrews 11 because it's so amazing. But today it's just verse number 2. It just grabbed me when I was thinking about it this week. At the very beginning, in verse 1, he says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. And then in verse 2, he says, and it's because of this that people in olden days, they were commended. And because of their faith, the word commended is a word that means God and other people spoke highly of them and thought a lot of them. And it was because of faith. Faith somehow makes you into a person that people speak well of. I'm done. No, not quite. But that pretty much it. But it made me think about, that thing of people thinking highly of you or wanting people to think well of you, because it's really what it means. It means people spoke well of you. And I thought about a moment that where that thing about what people thought of me, it kind of reached a peak in my life, not really a peak, the other thing, like the lowest dip, when it happens to many of us, and it was in the 7th grade, when you really care about what people think of you. And I was in the cafeteria at the old Jefferson down here off of Kentucky. And it really mattered what people thought. And maybe for the first time in my life, what maybe girls thought, And we were at lunch, and my mom had made me a roast beef sandwich, but the kind of from the pot roast of the day before. So it was like really pot roast. And I put like way too much in my mouth, like I always do. And I can remember this, like, half of the thing went down my throat, but it had that little string, that roast beef has on it. And so half was in my mouth. And so the half of it got stuck in my throat. And I was like choking, And I was doing that choking thing where I'm like, I need a Heineken, And it's like, and I thought, no, that's not it. You're only in the 7th grade, But I thought, I'm choking. And I didn't want anybody to know because I was like embarrassed. I was like, this is going to be super embarrassing if I die right here. And I didn't know what to do. And so what I did was I followed that string down to where it was. I stuck my fingers in my throat and I grabbed it. I pulled it out and I just slung it on the table, just slung it there. And I was like, I'm alive. I'm so glad to be alive. And then all these girls were like, ew, gross. That was so gross. And I looked at it and I was like, and I do wish I was dead. Just that thing where, but you do want people to not think crazy things about you or bad about you. And he says, people of faith, people speak well of them. And I thought like a million times the New Testament says, if you believe in Jesus, people are going to say bad things about you, which they do around the world. When missionaries were first going to China, when the China Inland Mission started in Hudson Taylor, and they had a massive riot in this town because the Chinese people, and this is a weird thing, but it happens all over the world to missionaries when they go to brand new places, but they have the thing of communion, and people in the town who don't want them there find out that they do this thing where they talk about eating the body and drinking the blood and taking communion, and they spread the rumor that they're cannibals, which would be a really bad thing if it was true, But that's what I remember. I guess it was these kids were watching with their parents. It was Jurassic Park 2 on TV, and they and those kids were super concerned that their parents were going to freak out that it was too violent, And they're like, okay, we're cool. And it got to the part where these two T-Rexes split a guy in two. They were fighting over it, and the little boy looked at his dad and said, they're not sharing that guy, are they, Dad? You know, but so it would be a bad thing to, you know, eat people, but they weren't. But it's not that the New Testament says that people will say bad things about you. It's because of what you believe. It's because of Jesus, which people said all kinds of terrible things about him when he walked our earth, and they had all kinds of terrible opinions about him. There was one place where people got so angry at him. The people who were kind of trying to be the best, Jesus just brought out the worst. And they got so angry at him that they picked up rocks and they were going to hit him with rocks. I mean, that is angry when somebody's like, I'm so mad at you. I don't know. I'm just going to grab a rock and throw it at you, you know, and that's where they were. There was one place where they got so angry at Jesus that they were going to push him off of a cliff. And Luke says that he just walked through the crowd, which it's hard to really know what exactly happened, whether he just turned around and just stared at them with love and, really, guys, we've come to this. And they just, whether it was that, whether he paralyzed them, it'd be cool when we get to heaven to find out that he just elevated them all about 7 feet up in the air. You know, they're like, whoa, whoa, and he just walked underneath them, you know. That would be cool if that's what happened, but we don't know. But it wasn't, it was things that he said, but it wasn't him. Because him, the way he was, just as a person, people loved him. It says in the Gospel of Luke that at the end of the last verse of chapter 2, that he was the favorite of God and people. And just kids loved him. Animals loved him. One time he rode on a donkey that had never been ridden before. Try that and see how it works for you. You know, it's just when he was in the wilderness being just taunted by Satan. And it says that he was with the wild beast. And I just think that they, you know, kept him warm at night when he was sleeping on rocks and things. The little kids in his carpenter shop. For 30 years, Jesus, well, for 23 years, Jesus was a carpenter. That before he ever did anything miraculous, he was a carpenter. And he was everybody's favorite. Little kids just come to him all day, get him to fix their toys and stuff. And teenage boys asking him their questions about girls and, you know, what do you do when you're choking and you're, you know, and they all think I'm gross now, you know. Old men just sitting there outside his carpenter shop just talking about the scriptures and just hearing what he had to say. I was reading a book this week about the humor of Jesus in the New Testament, and there was tons of it. A lot of it we don't get, but they would have been rolling in the aisles, you know. At a wedding, the first miraculous thing he ever did, he didn't want anybody to know it because he transformed 120 gallons of water into the most delicious wine without anybody knowing it except select people. And I often wondered why he didn't want anybody to know until I thought about, you know, this was a young bride's wedding day. This was the day that the spotlight should be on her. And I thought, wow, that is so sweet. You know, this guy was saying when Jesus said stuff about the Pharisees, that before you pick something out of somebody's eye, you got a log sticking in your eye. And they would have thought that was hilarious. I saw this cartoon where this Pharisee guy was asking this other guy, do you want to join our club, our holiness club? And the guy was like, Would I? And he's like, just say no. You don't have to call me names, you know. But he says it's people, the people that other people look at them and they say sweet things about them and people really like them or should really, really like them, even though they might not like what they say. He said it's people of faith. They're the ones that are commended, that are well spoken of. And by faith, he means people who believe in Jesus, that you don't have to do anything except believe in Jesus. 90 times in the Gospel of John, it says all you have to do is believe in Jesus. One time, some people said, what do we have to do the work of God? What does God want from us? And Jesus said in John chapter 6, he said, this is the work of God, that you believe in the one that he sent. That's all you have. You don't have to do anything. And it's like, well, you have to do some things. You have to, you have to brush your teeth. I mean, nobody's going to brush your teeth for you. It's like, well, maybe, but not to be acceptable. In Job chapter 19, Job said about his wife, my breath is detestable to his wife. Well, maybe you should have brushed your teeth for her, but for God, you don't have to do anything. He doesn't care if you don't brush your teeth. In the New Testament, humanity is divided into two groups. People who God can accept and welcome, and people that he can't accept them. They're unacceptable. There are people that God will say, I welcome you. I accept you. And other people that God will say, I cannot accept you. I can't. And it will break his heart, but he won't be able to accept them. And I'm thinking, what do you have to do to cross that line, to get into these people, like the acceptable people? I remember one time, you don't have to do anything but believe in Jesus. It's all you have to do. I remember, oh man, when we used to live in Italy, they have a chameleon Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't know if y'all know anything about Jehovah's Witnesses, but there are tons of them in Italy. A paper said one time that 1 in 8 in the world lives in Italy or is Italian. They'll stop you if you stand still long enough, 2 of them will stop you. And I used to like to talk to them, and I used to have different lines I would use with them, but one of them is like, let them talk for a while, and then say, guys, let's imagine this. Okay, I'm a person, I've been a terrible person, and I've done a bunch of terrible things, but I want God to accept me, like I want to go to heaven and all that, but I've got a very, very serious disease. In fact, I don't have much time left. I've only got 1 minute. Do you have anything that you can tell me? What's your message, guys? You got 1 minute. And they would be like, well, it's not that easy. You have to like repent of like all of your sins and promise that you'll never sin anymore. And it's complicated. I'm like, guys, I got 30, you better get to the point. I got 33 seconds left, and then you have to go to this, our group and get these magazines and go talk to people. And really, guys, 32, I'm dead. You didn't tell me anything, And it's just like, and I said, I can tell you in a minute. All you have to do is we're all a complete and total mess. We can't do anything about it. Almighty God, which they don't believe, has come into our world and as a human being to teach us how to live and show us how to live. But we don't follow his teachings and we don't follow his example. So he came to pay, and he did pay, and he rose from the dead, and he offers you a complete and total forgiveness of everything you have done, do, or will do. And all you have to do is say, I want it. It's a gift. You have to say, I want it. Will you say, I want it? I've got 17 seconds to sing you a song about it. It's hard for some people to, it's even hard for some Christians. They struggle with it. It's like, just to say, all you have to do is believe. It feels like easy believism. And it's like, how hard do you want to make it? I remember one time, it was a summer, and we came home from the summer when we were missionaries. And sometimes when you come home, like every other year, you kind of hear discussions that people are having that that it seems kind of a shift to you, and you weren't a part of the whole thing breaking out and everything. And so to them, it kind of gradually gets into this. But one summer, there was a big discussion about what is the gospel? What is the gospel? And it's not just easy. You have to make Jesus the Lord of your life, and or promise that you're going to be willing to let him be the Lord of your life. And you have to do that in order to get into this thing. And Tina and I had been doing a ton of sharing Jesus in a park with heroin addicts. It was one of the 10 worst heroin infested places in the world. And almost everybody in there was a homeless heroin addict who were 98% of them were HIV positive, and they were, dying of AIDS and stuff. And it's like, what do you want him to do? He's addicted to heroin. You want him to make Jesus the Lord of his life before he can get into, or at least promise to. People who know drug addicts know that they always say, they'll promise you anything. The way you know whether or not a drug addict is lying to you is their mouth moving? You know, it's like they'll promise anything. They can't help it. They're addicted to heroin. They need someone to save them. And they can't offer anything. They need someone to give them something free because they don't have anything to pay. It's a gift. It's a complete and total gift. And all you have to do is say, I need it. I want it. And I'll take it. And when a person does that, this book of Hebrews says that makes you into a beautiful person. And a person that people like and that people talk well of. And there's this other dynamic that goes on in the New Testament and in the Gospels especially, that people who, instead of that, are trying to be a better person. Like, they don't just cry out for the mercy of God because they're so hopeless, but they're trying to be a better person. They're trying to work on self-improvement, self-help, try to live by certain values, traditional values, conservative family values, and help other people to live by conservative values. Strangely, that makes people worse. It makes them into worse people when people are just trying to live by traditional values. And that's my thing, and that's how I go through this world. There's a group in the New Testament called the Pharisees. You just say their name and people think, oh man, they're so self-righteous and bitter and hateful and sour and yucky. They're just yucky. And they didn't start out that way. Let's just see how yucky we can be. The group that are known as the Pharisees, when you finish up the Old Testament, there's usually one page that says the New Testament, and then you're in the New Testament in Matthew chapter 1. That one page represents 400 years. And that's where this group came from. They came from that 4-century period. And in the Old Testament, the story kind of ends not so great, where the people of God, of Israel, were in their promised land. And there got to be a point where the king, he had a wife who was a witch. And they basically made the worship of Satan the national religion of Israel. So not going too good. So they were really losing it. So what happened was a really ferocious empire, the Babylonians, came, conquered them, gobbled them up, and just took them all to Babylon for 70 years. And while they were there, they were thinking, why did that happen? It's because, like, we've totally forgotten the scriptures and God and what he wants of us. We need to never let that happen again. And it's really, really important that we do what we're supposed to. And so when they came back, and it was a totally different situation, they said, we got to do what God has for us to do, what he wrote that we're supposed to do. So like Nehemiah, for example, in the book of Nehemiah, where they built the broken down wall around their city, and like, oh good, we're done with our work. And there were people from like the neighboring people, and they were selling like their farms, goods and produce and stuff. But on the Sabbath day, he said, nope, not on the Sabbath day. That's one thing that really got us in trouble. So we're not going to do that. And in fact, we're closing the gate on the Sabbath day. So they would get and wait outside the gate. And Nehemiah yelled from the top of the wall, are you going to make me come down there? Go home until tomorrow. I'll lay hands on you. And then some of their people started doing the thing that had gotten them in trouble before. They started dating and marrying the women that lived like in the region that weren't part of their people. And Nehemiah said, stop this. God doesn't want it. I am going to pull your hair. That's what he said. He did it. He pulled their hair. It's like, this can't go on. You know, and it was a really important thing. And so there was a group of people who said, we really need to focus on this. And they built kind of Bible study centers called synagogues. And they said, this is where we're going to study the Bible and find out what God wants. And we're going to keep to it and keep to our traditional values and try to encourage everybody to live by these traditional values. And they wrote books like, here's what God said, just to make sure we don't get anywhere close to breaking this. We're going to specify, like, you're not supposed to work on the Sabbath day. So They had these volumes called the Mishnah. For the people who stayed in Babylon, it was 90 volumes. This is what it means to follow what God says. Like, if you spit on the Sabbath day, you can spit on a rock, but don't spit in the dirt, because that's like plowing, and that would be working. You can't eat any chicken eggs that are laid on the Sabbath day, because that chicken had to work for that egg. And so you know, just all of that kind of stuff like that. Because when they came back out of Babylon, it was kind of like when the pilgrims came to America, and it was like wild. It wasn't a place that they were used to, so they needed guidelines. But for complicated reasons, it made people mean to say, we're going to live by these values, and we're going to encourage our whole society to do it. Traditional, conservative values. They wound up being the meanest people there were. There was a place in Luke chapter 18, Jesus talked about a Pharisee in the temple, and there was a guy in the back, and he was crying out for mercy. Lord, somehow have mercy on me. And the Pharisee was like, oh God, I thank you. I'm not like other people. I thank you. I'm not like doofus over here. You know, and it's like, really? A guy's crying out for mercy? In Luke chapter 7, there was a woman. Jesus was in the home of a Pharisee who had invited him over. And a woman who was so overcome by her thankfulness because Jesus had forgiven her for a lot of bad stuff. And she just came in crying. And she was sobbing. And she didn't know what to do. Just fell at Jesus' feet and just sobbing. And this Pharisee's like, what is this? I think she's trying to drum up business. Really, dude? That's what you're going to say about? That's the meanest thing I've ever heard of. You just said the meanest thing. They got to a place where they were like, Jesus is loving all these people who don't follow our traditional values. He's tearing our society apart. We have to get rid of him. And then in John chapter 12, they decided, people are following him because he's doing stuff like raising people from the dead. And it just makes everybody believe in him. We can't have it. They decided they were going to kill Jesus and re-kill Lazarus. Really? You're going to re-kill Lazarus? After Jesus had died and risen, he was in the book of Acts. There was this guy named Stephen, and he was explaining to them the message of Jesus. And he was basically telling them, traditional values don't work. We need something else. Just trying to live by values, it's not working. God had to send God the Son to pay for us because we can't keep this. And he got a little bit in their face. And it said they got so angry at him that their heart was sawn in two. And it said they started biting their teeth. I don't know what that means, but they were just like biting their teeth. And they rushed at him. The word rushed is used in Mark chapter 5 when Jesus cast out demons into a herd of pigs and they rushed off a cliff. They just started rushing at him and they're like, what do we do? We're so mad. And they picked up rocks. You're mad when you're picking up rocks. And they just killed him with rocks. And there was a guy named Saul who said, yes, that's what should happen to them. And so he got on a rampage. He was a Pharisee, the leading Pharisee of his day, of the school of Gamaliel, who was the conservative branch of their thing. And he said, these people that are following Jesus, saying Jesus was the Messiah, it's not right. It's not true. It can't be. And it says that he was going to Syria to arrest people. And it says he was breathing murder. Wow. I mean, that's like, it's like, you know, Darth Vader is like,
I'm going to kill them.
You know, he says in Acts chapter 26, telling his story, he said, I followed them until they were dead. And he said, my rage was maniacal. It's not right that they're saying this stuff. And we went to see last weekend, we went to see the Les Miserables thing. And there's a guy, the Les Miserables, it's the musical about the story of Les Miserables, that there's this guy and he was in prison for stealing bread for 19 years in hard labor camp. And he escapes his parole. And the chief of police, his name's Javert. And he's like this. It's like, you have to obey the law. It's not right. and I will pursue him. And he sings this song where he says, gosh, it was so amazing. It's the chief of police saying, there, out in the darkness, a fugitive running, fallen from God, fallen from grace. God, be my witness. I never shall yield till we come face to face. He knows his way in the dark. Mine is the way of the Lord. And those who follow his pathways will have their reward. And if they fall like Lucifer fell, the flame, the sword. And then he's just like, he's like the stars. They always do what they're supposed to do. But when they fall from the sky, they fall in flame. And he says, and so it must be. And so it is written on the doorway to paradise that those who stumble and those who fall must pay the price. God, he's so mean. And then he says, God, grant that I might find him, that I might see him. Safe behind bars. And I was just, I will not rest. This I swear by the side. It's just like, how did somebody get so mean? And so this is like Saul, whose name was Paul, until Jesus appeared to him on that road, risen from the dead, like the sun. And he was like, oops, I was really wrong about that one, you know? And then, so he believes in Jesus and he reflects on it for a long time. And he winds up becoming the sweetest person ever. I mean, he's just, the things that he writes about what Christians should be, when he makes a list, this is what a Christian should be like. Somebody was telling me, they were sharing with somebody, they were asking him, so what? Now that I'm a Christian, what should a Christian be like? And he said, I just told him, you read the Bible and you pray and you go to church and you talk to people about Jesus. And it's like, that all that stuff is important. It's how you get to a certain place, but that's not the list. Paul said, this is the list. You love, you're kind, you're gentle. It's a word that means sweet. He said, if we don't have love, we don't have anything. And it's patient, it's kind. It doesn't get all fired up about stuff. It doesn't take into account a wrong suffering. It believes not the worst, but the best about people. It doesn't want to believe the worst, from the president of the United States to the Mexican that cleaned your office. You believe the best about them and not the worst about them. That's what love is. In chapter 4 of Ephesians, he says, it doesn't say mean things. It doesn't get angry. It doesn't blow up. It isn't bitter. It isn't malicious. It's kind and tenderhearted. When he gets to the elders of what elders of a church should be like, in chapter 3 of 1 Timothy, he said, here's the list. This is the way they should be. They should be sweet. He uses a word, he said, they should be beautiful. There's something about, they should be a lover of aliens from other countries. Wow. They shouldn't like strife. They shouldn't like to fight. But they should be kind and sweet. And that's what it looks like. And if everybody who believed in Jesus was that, which it hasn't all, not usually that, I mean, hasn't always been that way. A lot of times people who love Jesus, they can be judgmental and mean. Brennan Manning said, and they fight, and they like to fight, and it isn't wrong. Brennan Manning said, the greatest cause of atheism in the world is Christians who say one thing, and then they walk out of their house and they don't live it. That's what the unbelieving world finds simply unbelievable. You know, I remember, I probably told you all this story like a million times, but back in the Charles Spurgeon, he's like my homeboy and everything, but he was a pastor in London in 1800s, but there was a guy named Robert Hall who had written a booklet that was really popular called Come to Jesus, about how you come to Jesus. And another man named Newman Smith, who was a pastor in London, had problems with his theology, and he wrote a real bitter critique of him in the Manchester Guardian. Like, he's like, this is what I don't agree about him, and it was really bad. And Robert Hall was like, I'm going to answer back. And so he wrote back this bitter thing, and he took it to Spurgeon for him to read it. And Spurgeon said, it's true. It's good. What are you going to title it? He said, I don't know. He said, why don't you title it Go to Hell by the author of Come to Jesus? And he was like, okay. And he threw it in the garbage where it belonged, you know, but I was just, you know, you have this thing where people who are trying, to live by values. And this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to live by values. And when you add it up, they come out with a negative 37. It's like, how do you get negative? And other people who have given up trying, and they wind up being beautiful. It doesn't add up. You know, and I'm thinking about like Paul. How did he turn from being such a murderous, maniacally rage-filled person who was trying to promote traditional values into someone who was so sweet and kind and beautiful? How did it happen? It doesn't add up in his life. I don't get the math. The thing about it is, it isn't math. It's something else. It's love. You know, I was just thinking about like Paul when it happened. And Jesus appeared to him from heaven, like the sun, brighter than the sun. And he spoke to him. And after that, Paul was blind for 3 days. And he was all by himself for 3 days. And he thought about this experience and the words that he had just heard. And they were ringing in his head. And he was like, he was just thinking about what that Jesus had, well, was the Messiah and was God. And, you know, and I've been completely wrong about that. And he's like, and Jesus said, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he was like, just thinking about that. I was trying to hurt people who followed him. But he loved them. He loves them so much that he's like, they're mine. Why are you trying to hurt them? I was trying to hurt them because I hate them. I hated them. Wow. I'm the person who's living by traditional values, and I hate people that the Messiah loves. But then he says, why are you persecuting me? And it's just like, he is so identified with them and loves them so much that when I'm trying to hurt them, I'm trying to hurt him. He is the Messiah. I have been trying to be a good person my whole life, waiting on the Messiah, and I hate the Messiah. Wow. And the Messiah is Lord. Who are you, Lord? I am the Lord God. Trying to be a good person has brought me to a place where I hate people. I hate the Messiah. I have hated God. And then Jesus said, it's hard for you to kick against the goads, which were like this pointy thing that they would point at animals. And he's like, I'm like an animal. You know, he had all his life lived under that thing. When you do something wrong, you take a goat or whatever, and you slit its throat, and it's really yucky and gross, and you kill it. And it was to get them ready for the Messiah. When he would come, he would shed his blood and pay for our wrong. But why was it a goat? And it was because the Messiah was taking our place. And we who were born to love God and love people, we've become animals. You know, I've been reading the Gospel of Matthew, and just asking myself, why should I love Jesus more? And I've got a million reasons. But when you think about what they did to him when he was arrested, and they tortured him. They tortured him almost to death. And then they put a robe on him, and they sat him in a chair, and they had to sit him up because they had almost, and they bowed down, and they worshiped him to mock him. And I thought, this is what you were made for. And you're making fun of it. And then they took him out, and it said they crucified him. And it's like, did nobody ask, should we be doing this? Could this not be a terrible mistake? But then I was reading about Jesus and the hours before that, and how he took bread and he broke it. And he said, this is my body. But before he broke it, he blessed it. And it's like, I am about to be tortured, and I am calling down a blessing on it, a blessing on my own torture. And he took a cup, and it was blood, and it was the blood that it was wine that represented blood that within moments he would shed. And he thanked God for it, and he thanked God for the opportunity to shed copious amounts of blood for us. And then he got the garden and he got on his face and he began to be afraid. I just thought about it. He began to be afraid. He had never been afraid in all of eternity. And he didn't have to do this, but he did it because he loved us. And Paul is like, I have become an animal. And he didn't blow me up. He didn't burn me up. He said he had a plan for me. And he loves me. And that's what it is. It's just love. Love. He loved someone he shouldn't have loved. Paul's like, if I knew who I was, I wouldn't have loved me. You know? And it's just about love. And that is what I've been reading. There was a woman named Carla Faye Tucker who was executed in Texas for a pickaxe murder of two people with her boyfriend. She was on crack. She was crazy. And she went to prison. And in prison, there were some women that came to do a puppet show and talk about Jesus. And she didn't usually go. This was before her trial. And she didn't usually go to the church thing, but she wanted to go. And this puppet show, and she said there was an atmosphere in there I had never felt of love. And it captured my heart. And I listened to them talk with puppets about Jesus. And I had never felt anything like it. And they had these Bibles there that they were giving out, which I didn't know. So I stole one. And she took it back to her cell. She said, I began to read it. She said, I read it, and it wasn't long. I was on my face for the first asking God to forgive me, and I was crying so much. And for the first time in my life, I realized what I had done to two people and how horrible it was and how there were people out there that were hurting in ways that I would never know, and it was because of me, and I was loved by God anyway. She said, I didn't really feel forgiven quite yet, that would come. But it's like the love of God that I was reading in that book came into my heart and it ripped the violence out of it. And the love of God filled it, and she became the sweetest person and just the most joy-filled person that you would ever meet. And it's just because of love. I was reading 1 John this week. And it's always kind of intimidated me. I mean, it's a kind of intimidating book, How to Know You're Really a Christian, and Here's the Signs. It was just love. He said, it's just love. That's how you know you have this, is that you know that the reason you were a mess and guilty of all kinds of things is because you didn't love God and didn't love people, but God loved you so much that he paid for you, and he offers you in love a free gift. And if you'll take it, you're saying, I need it, I want it, and I want to love you, and I'll love you. And love blows up in your mind. And like in 1 John, he said, God is love. All he wants is love. How do you know you have this? You love people. If you hate people, you don't get it, because people who hate don't know the love of God. It's all about love, and it's what makes people sweet, because they realize God has loved me, and I wouldn't have loved me, but he did, and love has filled my heart. And that's what we're here to do. Love people. Forgive everybody in your life. Just forgive them. Just forgive them. If you've got people you resent, forgive them. Forget it. Do it. If there's people you don't love, stop not loving them. We're just supposed to love people. It's why we're in the world, to live a life of love. It's just about that. I was reading about the guy named Rick Riley. He wrote an article about Tim Tebow, you know, And he just said, Rick Riley is 11 times National Sports Writer of the Year. He said, Tim Tebow, I believe in him. Not because of what he does on the field, where he's three parts Dr. Jekyll and two parts Mr. Hyde, but he said, it's his heart. He said, what Tim Tebow does every single week is of a game is he finds a family through this program where somebody's dying of a brain tumor or somebody's had a terrible, kids, adults, that they're dying or they're going through something horrible. He flies them to whatever game, away or home, puts him in a beautiful hotel. If he's in Denver, takes him to his favorite restaurant. Otherwise, takes him to a great restaurant. Rents him a car. Before the game, he's with them. And just loving on them and talking to them. And after the game, after his press conference, he goes to them and spends an hour with them. And just loves on them and talks to them. And they walk him to his car. He does it every week. And this guy said, I have searched for the hypocrisy in Tim Tebow. I've searched for it, for that Hollywood thing. He doesn't have an ounce of it. And it's because he loves Jesus. And one little girl who had a lung disease, she was in there and it's going to kill her. And after the game, it was after the Steelers game when he threw Demaryius Thomas that awesome touchdown and blew everybody's mind and did the press conference and then went straight to them. And to this little girl named Bailey. And she said, this is the best day of my life. It was a bright star among very gloomy and difficult days. There was this one guy who has a brain tumor. And he did that thing to him. And he said, people wonder how just genuine he is. He's the most genuine person I have ever met. He said, I have short-term memory loss. I will never forget this day. One little boy named Zach Taylor, who is in constant pain, and it's when he shocked the Chicago Bears by coming back, 13-10. This kid had 10 doctors, and when Tim Tebow was with him, the little boy said, do you have a secret prayer for hospital visits? And he whispered it in his ear. And before the doctors had to check him out, he took Zach in there, but only after they had whispered that prayer together. People say, isn't it a distraction for you to spend time with the sick and dying before a game? He said, it's just the opposite. It's by far the best thing I do to get myself ready. Here you are about to play a game that the world says is the most important thing in the world. Win and they praise you. Lose and they crush you. And I have a chance to talk to the coolest, most courageous people I know. It puts it all in perspective. The game doesn't matter. I mean, I give 100% of my heart to win it. But in the end, the thing I most want is not to win championships or to make money. It's to invest in the lives of people. So that's it. Wow. One guy said, this guy said he had a neighbor, and his neighbor was building a shed. He said he's the sweetest atheist I know, but this neighbor built this awesome shed, and he said, how did you build that cool-looking shed? He said, well, you get a book, and you read it, and you build it. He said, but there's one step that's the most important step, and it never would have happened if I hadn't taken this step. I decided to do it. You have to make up your mind that you're going to do it. If I decide I'm going to do it, it'll get done. And some people need to decide, I'm tired of being mean. I'm tired of being unforgiving. I'm tired of hating people. God has loved me, and he's called me to a life of love. I'm going to do that. Father, teach us to love. Teach us to love by the gospel that has filled our hearts with love, so that we will be the sweetest, kindest, most gentle, most loving people that anybody's ever met. Help us.